That could all be cut out.
Just don't dog my pillow now.
I'm already dogging your pillow.
Don't dog my pillow now.
I'm a dog.
Okay.
We might just keep all this.
Okay, welcome back to episode 3 here with
times 2.
Oh, the bird's nest. I forgot the name for a second. I'm sorry. My brain is a little frazzled today. Only because we have so much to do later on. We have to pack. We're going to Maryland to see our family tomorrow. So my brain is on a million things. Okay. All right. Episode 3 of the bird's nest. And we're actually doing this over because our whole episode, it got corrupted. It got deleted. It is gone. We did this episode already. Just like this, recording, everything is gone. So here we are. Awesome episode we have in store for you guys. And it's entitled Sleepless Nights and Sticky Fours.
For sure. And some of the things that we'll talk about. We'll be just highlighting briefly is some of the tantrums and the sleepless nights and just, you know, what it means to really just be parenting in the trenches, how that can be difficult at times. But, hey, when you in there, you in there. You just got to stick it out.
Mm-hmm. And though sometimes social media may look like parenting is this beautiful, you know, amazing experience, it, and that's true, it is, but there is this ghetto side to it. Okay, very ghetto. If you're a parent, if you're a caregiver, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It is ghetto. Okay, and it is hard. So that's just what we're gonna be getting into. And so
we're recording this over, we do have a lot going on. So we do. Levi was asleep the first time around we recorded this, and so he is up. We got to entertain him, so we got Bluey playing in the background. He's in his
love, Bluey.
His pack and play. So y'all may hear some background noise. That's just him. But hey, what are we gonna do? Can't do nothing about it.
There's nothing we could do about it.
This is parenting in the trenches.
Yeah, it is. Right. But what does parenting in the trenches mean to you?
This situation right here is parenting in the trenches. But it's more to me when I think about parenting in the trenches, I think about like maybe the soldier that's been left behind and he's crawling with no legs as he's trying to survive.
Not no legs.
In this world. It's just, it's difficult. You know, when you think about parenting in the trenches, it's just about being there for your kids and showing up even when you don't feel well enough to do so. Even when you at times don't feel like doing it. When you don't want to be a parent. Parenting in the trenches is about showing up and just being there, being who you need to be and who your kids need you to be at that time. Being present, being available, and being willing for your children.
When we were like dating and we were talking about marriage, did you have like a certain expectation or idea of what you thought parenting would look like for you?
Yeah, because I think in episode 2, we somewhat like talked about it. We, you know, we came into the marriage. Obviously, we knew for the most part Micah did have a speech delay. We didn't know how really deep the still waters were. And so, you know, it took us, you know, some years, so to speak, really, yeah, to get to that point to where it was. So, yeah, leading up to that, when you're just a parent coming into it, a pre-made family, you're just thinking like, hey, you know, it's just going to be a certain way. You know, we'll have those, you know, father-son interactions, and it'll be a certain way. That's just the expectation.
Yeah.
But the reality really settled in when you realized that wasn't going to be the case.
Yeah.
Didn't change how, you know, I viewed the situation. It just meant that, you know, I had to approach it from a different angle.
Yeah, I think we both probably had different ideas of what parenting would look like together as a unit. I know, well, it's hard for me to say. For background context, I was a single parent, solo parenting before we got married. So I did not know what a father figure looked like for Micah. I grew up with my father. I grew up with both my parents in a household. I was fortunate to be in that situation. But I did not have prior experience to what it was like sharing a child with another parent. So for me, it was like, okay, I know what it was like having two parents in a household, but to experience that with my own son, that's different. And it may not sound like it's complicated, but when you've had to be the solo parent, the only parent for those first 3 years, it is different. It looks, it, you know, it's like, okay, you know, now somebody else got to step in and they're the head of the household, whereas you were your own head of the household before. And I mean, I had concerns. I think my concerns mainly were like, will he really understand Micah? Because Micah, at the time, again, like you just said, he was
speech to life.
Yeah, and it's not like he could just express himself and say if something was wrong, if something upset him. You really had to like investigate. I always say this. We had to be investigators, like investigate and try to piece together what triggered this, what happened here, you know, what took place on this day. Is there a pattern, in order to really understand Micah, who at the time only probably spoke like five words, up please. Everybody was called baby. Yep. Juice, please. You know, that was literally, for the most part, all he was saying. So everything else, it was very difficult to understand Micah. It was just...
And I do understand, like, where you're coming from as far as, like, with, you know, really you're referring to is, like, the trust aspect of it. Like, can I trust an individual to, or this person, rather, to be... you know, who my son needs and to understand, you know, the situation that we're dealing with at hand. Because that is difficult. And for the most part, I will say it was difficult for me because, like most of you who may be listening to this podcast, may have grown up in that mentality of how your parents raised you, which was really, you know, hardcore, so to speak. I knew for myself, you know, growing up, parenting looked a certain way, being the second youngest of six children. And so my dad working two jobs, my mom working during the day, you know, parenting to me looked a certain way. And normally it was really cold cut. It was right to the point. My mom was a mother, a disciplinarian. She was everything under the book. She was the mother, the father, everything. You know, and I got the battle scars to show. So when you come from that, sometimes that's your background. That sometimes it's just embedded in you. It's a cycle that you just somewhat repeat. And so, you know, dealing with someone with like Micah who did have a speech delay, sometimes it was like a very thin line between, is it that he doesn't know how to express himself, or is he just being, you know,
stubborn,
not wanting to say or do exactly what. Because a lot of times it wasn't. I mean, yeah. I mean, you know, your kid after a while, half of the time, yeah, Micah can be stubborn at times. But a lot of times too, it's not being able to do one or two things: express himself, or being able to understand the instruction that was given. And so, where it can be simple for someone like myself, or someone who's just rather who's, you know, neurotypical, they may take it, process it, and be able to then do what you're asking. But someone who's neurodivergent, it's not as easy. Something that may come out or roll off the tongue to us that's easy, to ask a child to do or to ask, you know, Brittany or someone to do, it may be easily taken in. But for someone like Micah, it was difficult. And so I had to learn how to read between those lines. I had to learn how to readjust my parenting so yeah. that I could be, you know, a good parent to Micah. And so it took a lot. And like I said in the last episode, and like I will continue to say, he just spoke a different language. And I had to be brave enough to understand that language, or rather want to even learn the language to speak that language for him. And so, yeah, that's what it really, the way I, at least the way I perceived it, you know, in the beginning.
Yeah, I definitely think that having a son like Micah really, I'll speak for myself, and maybe you'll agree, has been very humbling and very eye-opening, because I remember before having Micah, both as an educator, I worked as a, out here in Philly, you'd be called a one-to-one, but back home in New York, you were called a para or a paraprofessional. You basically were like a teacher's assistant in the classroom. We mainly worked with children with special needs. And being that I worked in education for 8 years, whenever we saw a kid that was having behavioral problems or acting up or whatever the case is, the first thing we say is, well, that kid probably needs a beating or a whooping. He ain't getting disciplined, okay? This is what we would say. I'm sorry. Maybe not everybody right now, but this is what a lot of times we said, okay? And then also, too, I used to be that person. I go through the grocery store. I see a parent on the floor. The kid is going crazy, you know, arms and legs is flailing all over the place. And then, you know, like he probably almost hit his parent and all this stuff. And I'd be one of those in the back of my head, just like judging, shaking my head, like, that kid needs to get whooped. I was that person. Until I had Micah, because let me tell you, and I'm going to be very honest right now, very honest. And I used to be, when Micah was like around two, when he was two, what I assumed were just the terrible twos, the tantrums, they were meltdowns. I didn't know anything about that. So what was happening? The boy was throwing things. They would go flying all over the place. You could ask my mom, ask my dad. They will tell you. Anything went flying. The hard toys went flying. The hangers went flying. The cars went flying. Everything went flying. You never knew where it was going to end up. It would go. You feel the wind. You feel the wind across your face. You feel something go right by your ear. You hear like a fly. Like right by your ear. You never knew where something was going to end up. And this was life with Micah. And then when he did something, you would repeat yourself a million times over. So, of course, you and your mind are going to say, okay, I've told you the same thing a million times over. Now you're just choosing not to listen. What I didn't realize is I'm saying a million things a million times over. But if I said a million things a million times over in Spanish to you, but I never explained what that thing was in Spanish, does it mean that you automatically know what I'm saying now? No. First, I have to break it down and explain to you what this means in English for you to understand first. It doesn't matter how many times I say it in Spanish. If I don't translate it for you to understand, you're not going to, at the million times, you still don't understand. And that's what was happening. So I took that to be where he's not listening intentionally. And I was disciplining him. He was getting beat. He was not getting the timeouts for the amount of time of years he's been on this earth. There wasn't no 2-minute timeout. That boy was on timeout till he fell asleep. Okay. I'm not proud of these moments, and I'm not judging anybody. Don't call the peoples on me. Don't call the peoples on me. Okay. This was my past life. I've changed my ways. Now listen, I'm not judging anyone who feels that whatever, you know, however you need to discipline your child accordingly is whatever you feel you need to discipline your child accordingly. The Bible tells us that discipline is love, and I am a firm believer that discipline is love, okay? Mm-hmm. What I'm saying and what I'm sharing is what I was doing with Micah, it was not constructive for Micah, because what was happening is he started hitting us. He started hitting me. He started hitting my mom. And my mom, with her two children, okay, that she raised on this earth, who are both now grown adults and have families of their own, she would be just as dumbfounded as I was. And we'd be sitting on the floor looking at each other like, what do we do now? Like, how do we handle this? And we were both lost. We were both confused. We were both dumbfounded. We had no clue how to handle Micah. He gets so upset. He gets so upset and so worked up that he would sometimes throw up. He would be hot and red and sweaty from head to toe. Yeah. He would be crying to the point where he would start hyperventilating. It was something I had never seen in a child before. And this was happening all the time. And we didn't know what to do. So I realized with my disciplining Micah, when I was hitting him, I was not teaching him to stop a behavior. I was teaching him a new one, and that was hitting. And that's why, for me, I decided not to hit anymore, at least at that time. But that's what I decided, was that the hitting was not constructive. It was not helping with his behaviors. And I had to find something else. I was searching for a very long time. And I was still searching even when we got married, you know? But I feel like that's a conversation we didn't really have. We didn't really talk about, like, discipline before we got married.
No, yeah, we really didn't. I think a lot of that, you know, fell on just how quickly things did transpire. But then also, too, you know, the diagnosis wasn't in play.
No.
And so we didn't know how that would work. And then, like I said, like, a lot of it was just based off of how you grew up. You know, I come, like I said, you know, my mother would beat us, you know, all six of us. One person got in trouble, but she would beat all six. You'd be like, why you beat me? And she'd be like, because it's for something that you did that I don't know about.
I'll crack it up.
And so, you know, I came from that. And I feel like, you know, on the subject of that, I feel like that's just something that each person looks at their situation and they make that decision based off of what they feel is best. For me, I know it worked. I like to believe that I think it worked for me.
What is that?
You know, the way my mother disciplined us. Mm-hmm. For me, it worked because it just kept me in line. It kept me in line and made me, you know, really have, I won't say a fear, but I had a proper fear because it just really just helped me to see, you know, it was more of a fear of displeasing.
Yeah.
You know, and my mother and father wasn't like, you know, they wasn't like just, there wasn't no Joe Jackson, you know, but they, you know, they did it within reason.
Mm-hmm.
And they did it within reason. And so I really can't complain, but I know it kept me on the straight and narrow. But a lot of times too, it depends on the child. Each child is different.
Yeah.
You know, I think about my one sister, you know, you could just look at her and say something. And for the most part, that was what it was like with me and Micah.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, a lot of times I would just say something to Micah and it would just be like,
he'd be in tears. I'd be like, ow, how?
Yeah, like, so it was like, I would just look at him.
AJ could just look at him, just say something, and he automatically would be like, no, like, I'm not going to do it anymore.
And really, that just leaves me just something, just when I'm thinking about it. And I think I allowed that to affect the way I then begin to raise Micah and to discipline him and to parent him, because I would get those reactions and it's like, I'm not even doing half of the things. And, at this time you weren't doing nothing crazy, but I wasn't even doing or saying half the things you were saying to Micah. It would literally be just like, hey, Micah, don't do that. Or it would just be like a response and he would just like break down and cry. And so I got to the point where I was like, man, I don't even want to say nothing to him no more. I could be watching him do something that was just outrageous, and I can hear you out here struggling for your life, parenting in the trenches, and I'm like, I ain't going to go out there and say nothing because I don't want to deal with the crying. Yeah. But it just, like, made me think, like, at the end of the day, you still got to be present.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as much as it may come off, and I hope I'm saying this right, but like that child is yearning for that correction, is yearning for that discipline, to know that you're willing to stand up and be there and be present. You know, like you said, no discipline at the time is favorable, but it does produce results. And now when I look at Micah now, you know, we don't really have to. I mean, at times Micah is just going to be Micah, you know, and biology is just going to get in the way. You know, it's nothing you can do about that.
Micah gone, Micah.
You know, but at the same time, it's like, because of some of those rough patches we did go through in the beginning, it has yielded good results. Like, you know, we have a more polished Micah. You know, Micah, like I said, you know, biology is going to do its thing, but Micah is more polished, and he's a good kid. You know, he's a good kid. He's like any 7 year old. He's like any 7 year old. He's going to make his mistakes. He's going to do what he's going to do. But at the end of the day, you know, he's a good kid. You know, we wouldn't. I know I wouldn't, and I can say for certainty, I know we wouldn't change it for nothing.
And I think a big contributing factor to that is definitely, once we got the diagnosis and then got him some services going, got the ball with that, and definitely his speech improving, and that was a huge factor. So when Micah turned 3, I did take him to his pediatrician, and Micah up until that point was like excelling, reaching all his milestones. But it was that speech, and that speech was a huge concern. She was like, at this age, he should be saying at least like 200 words or something. I'm like, 200 words? A boy, he's like, 200 words? We're not even at 20 words, let alone 200 words. Like, what do you mean? So I told her, I was like, I think that I should have him, you know, evaluated to receive speech services, because this is concerning to me. And I had shared with her that I spoke with Micah's paternal biological grandmother, and she had informed me that Micah's paternal father, biological father, rather not paternal father, that makes no sense, but that his biological father, that he also had a speech delay, and that he didn't start speaking until he was 4 years old. So when I shared that with his pediatrician, she was like, oh, okay. Well, if that's the case, then that's probably the same thing that's going to happen with Micah. And he'll probably start speaking around that time too. I do not think that it's necessary at this time, because he's only 3 years old, for you to have to take him to be evaluated. I listened to that. And then the next thing you know, pandemic happened. And, you know, I kind of just swept it under the rug, so to say. I think my biggest regret when it comes to Micah services and all of that is that I didn't take him for a second opinion, or that I didn't just like ignore what she said, even though she's a great doctor with everything else. But she kind of dropped the ball with this. I'm not even going to lie. You know, I wish that I would have went with my mom gut, took him to be evaluated, and then I would have got the ball rolling, and then would have had this window into what was really going on with Micah a lot sooner. I can only think how things would have changed having that diagnosis sooner, even with us when we first, because it was hard. We bumped heads quite a lot in the beginning when it came to the subject of disciplining Micah.
Or really just interpreting what we thought he was coming. Because every meltdown was a message that he was relaying to us. Every meltdown was something. We just had to learn how to listen. But in the beginning stages, it was difficult to do that because, you know, we had the different backgrounds. We grew up differently. We come from not even, I can see if it was like, you had to realize like how much of a difference, like, you know, your mother is, you know, she's mixed, she's Black and Puerto Rican, your dad is straight Puerto Rican, and then I come from a straight African-American Black household. So it's two different cultures, really, you know, as far as like, you know, when it comes to like rearing your children and like, you know, upbringing them. And then two different cities.
You
know, New York and Pennsylvania, you know. And so, you know.
And even our family
dynamics.
A family dynamics, but also childhood experiences were very different. What you experienced, I could never relate to. And then the things, you know, that I went through, you can't relate to. So, yeah, I absolutely agree. They were very different.
And so it's going to be natural that that's going to take place.
Yeah.
Because, you know, at the end of the day, the motives were always good on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
So we only wanted the best for him. But at times you bump heads because what your best may look different from what your partner's best looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And what they may envision for their child and what you may envision for your child may look different. And so getting on the same page is what really, I think, got us to that point. When we were starting to listen to not only the behaviors that Micah was showing us, but then also ultimately listening to each other is what then gave us the means to make those necessary adjustments so that we can be, you know, figure out basically what is it that he's trying to tell us.
Yeah. And then and so what took place after we got married, we were able to hear about this awesome teacher from Brooklyn, Miss Jessie, Jessica Larcher. Shout out to Miss Jessie. She will always and forever have a special place in our family.
And if you want to know, yes, a little bit more about that, on episode 2, we dive into that. So you'll be able to see her link. We'll post another link too with her information here, but she's definitely someone who helped us a lot.
Her Instagram handle is the_reading_playground. We'll be sure to include that, like AJ said, but again, it's the_reading_playground. So can't recommend her enough. But with her experience, basically what we did with Micah is that we, had like private tutoring for him virtually. Again, this is all during the pandemic. So right now we're in 2021, I believe. And he had just turned 4. And that was right around the time that we started this private tutoring for him. And also a reading group. It was like, it was a few other kids in that reading group, but he seemed to really thrive in a one-to-one setting. So we were like, okay, let's really focus more in on his one-to-one setting with Miss Jessie. And he really did thrive. That's how he learned his 1-2-3s. Again, Micah at this time is still... Yes, sign language. And that was really great for him because he's a big-time visual learner. Was it Jack Hartman?
Jack Hartman.
He loved some Jack Hartman back in the day. Goodness, Jack Hartman was awesome. So it was Jack Hartman videos that we saw that he started taking an interest in with some of the sign language.
And
she
Pete
already
the Cat.
And Pete the Cat. So Help she me. Was like, I know sign language. That's nothing for me. We were like, what? This lady is fantastic. What can she do? So he started learning his ABCs with sign language, his 1-2-3s, shapes, colors, all those basics. Yep. This is at the age of 4. And then she says something one day and it's like a light bulb just goes off. And she says to us, have you guys ever considered having Micah evaluated for autism? And we were like... Like, I feel like you had maybe mentioned this one time.
But that's only because, like I said in episode 2, I that was my background. I worked in at the hospital. So I seen signs. But at the end of the day, I'm no doctor. And that was actually an argument.
You mentioned it
one argument.
Time.
You ain't no doctor. You ain't no doctor. Yeah, I ain't no doctor. But I see signs. I ain't no doctor. And so, you know, but no, I'm just playing. Like, I seen signs that, you know, pointed to that possibly. But you don't know. You don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I have to tell families today, like, when I'm at work, like, I'm no pediatrician. You're not a pediatrician. It's best to let us run this past the doctor. Like when we got the diagnosis, it really just helped us out because we were able to get the services. We were having the ABA come to the house, OT, and things like that. And then even times we even took Micah to the facilities where he was able to, you know, be in that area, in the playground and stuff like that, inside the building. I can't think of the name of it. But ultimately, it opened up the way for us to have a better communication with Micah.
Yeah.
Because the services then provided that help that we needed because we couldn't do it on our own.
Yeah.
You know, it was difficult. So that really set it up for us to be able to have, you know, to be successful, you know, in raising Micah.
And that communication made a huge difference.
Yeah.
Because then we could understand him. He could understand us. Mm-hmm. Unlike this little raggedy boy, Levi. Oh, that's my baby. No, it's just, he only won. So, you know, when they're so little, you it's just all that baby babble. You can't really understand what they want. You just,
old drunk man.
But, you know, but he sleeps well. So he does well with sleeping. I have to say that. That was a huge fear of mine when I was pregnant with him. Like, what would the sleeping be? Yeah. Only because when I had Micah, he had really bad colic. And that's when I was living on my own for those first 2 months that I had him. And I was staying at a friend of my aunt's in the Bronx. And it was rough. I did everything. And for those of you who don't know what colic is, it's like, they say it's usually due to gas, but in some cases it's not always gas. It could just be a phase that could last for hours, a day, weeks, months, years. And like he would just be crying. And I don't mean like, okay, all babies cry. Yeah, sure. But he would be crying hysterically, screaming like someone was trying to murder him. And I would go through this mental checklist. Did I burp him? Did I feed him? Did I swaddle him? Did I play white noise? Did I make the room comfortable? Did I put on some music? Did I turn off the music? Did I bathe him? Did I, you know, did I do all the things? And if I did all the things, then I literally just had to just sit back and let him do his thing and cry it out. And that could be for hours. And I just be sitting there like that meme of New York where she's just sitting there with the sunglasses on the bed like this. And that was me. Every single day this boy was crying. But I was so glad. I was so glad that did not happen when we had Levi. Because I was like, Lord knows, I can't go through this again. But, I mean, he did wake up throughout the night, though, yeah. To nurse.
People would be like, yo, is he sleeping, like, 6 hours now, 8 hours? We're like, man, he barely sleeping 3.
Yeah.
2. That's because you probably was breastfeeding, too.
It was the breastfeeding, for sure. Yeah. He made sure he woke up every few hours to nurse and then go back to sleep. That was his thing. He liked to be nursed back to sleep. And we tried the bottles with my milk. And he was like, no.
No, that wasn't working.
Like, no. You're not fooling me. You're not fooling nobody but yourselves. Give me that thing, okay? Like, you know what it's hitting for. Let's go. So he was like, no, it's not happening. Okay, so fine. Like, we did that. I nursed him for, like, I want to say I hung in there for about like maybe 14 months, maybe 14.
Yeah.
Like 14, 15 months. Okay. Was somewhere within there. And it's so funny because when we made that first trip away from home without him, like our first night without Levi, my parents were here in Philly. And then we had an event in New York. And so we spent the night at my parents' place away from him, and I was so nervous. The boy slept.
Yeah, he slept. My mother-in-law said he slept.
He slept. We were like, what? And so I was like, AJ, I don't know. I think this might be the time to pull the trigger and start weaning him off. Like, I'm tired of this life. And so I started weaning him off. And once I did,
he been sleeping like 8 hours, 10 hours.
He sleep through the night. And I was like, oh my gosh, if I would have known. Don't get me wrong, I love the fact that I was able to provide that, because I know that, you know, that's not something that should be taken for granted. Mm-hmm. And I'm always grateful that I was able to do that for both my sons. But it is definitely a sacrifice on your body. It's a sacrifice because your body is not yours. It's still partially theirs. And it takes energy out of you. It's draining, and it's just like you're always on call. I was on call 24/7, but to get a full night of sleep, man, I was like, shoot, we should have did this sooner. Yeah, we should have did this sooner, but it definitely different experiences with the both of them, you know.
Yeah, it was, and ultimately, I think it comes down to just being able to have a support system that we did have in place.
Yeah.
Because I know, like, Latrice and Karen was really, you know, encouraging you to do it. Like, yeah. Even prior to that, you know, because they cared about your well-being. They wanted you to make sure that you were getting the necessary rest that you needed in order to be, you know, helpful, you know, to the family arrangement. And so definitely having a support system in place is always important. I think we both gave each other or we try to give each other that open space for us to be able to come to each other, bounce things off of each other, so that way we can be more helpful to one another, more beneficial to the kids. Mm-hmm. That open space, you know, to vent, to cry, whatever it needed to be, mm-hmm. so that we could be that for each other. And I think that was really the main thing. I think without any of that, then we don't get to the point where we're at now, where we can look back and say, this is what things used to be to compare it to how they are now. And they're 1,000 times better now.
Yeah, especially when you're getting a full night of sleep. Yeah. I think everybody's better when you're getting a full night of sleep. Absolutely. Because so. I'll be looking at AJ in the morning like, this man, you know, this man with his 8 hours of sleep, you know. But he was offering. He was offering. He would offer all the time. Like, let me take Levi. Let me take him. And I'm like, but you can't, because you can't nurse him. Like, they don't do anything. You know what I'm saying? They're useless. They don't do nothing. He wants what he wants. He knows what he wants. But I also wanted AJ to get his full sleep, because he's you know, the only one who works. I'm the stay-at-home mom. He's the one who works. So I knew it was very important to support him in that way, so that he could support the family financially. So it was a sacrifice, but I feel like it's a small sacrifice in the grand scheme of things. And it was cool, because being that he works from home, he's always been super helpful, even during the day. Like, super helpful. But we've definitely come a long way ever since. They both have pretty good sleep routines. They sleep well, both Micah and Levi. They sleep really well throughout the night. And I think that gives us both a lot of peace of mind, for sure. So it just teaches us, you know, things may be hard, you know, for a while, wherever you're at in your parentingness or parent journey, but they may not always stay that way forever. No,
they're not.
They can get better. You know, everybody's journey is different, but they can get better.
Yeah, every trial is going to have an end point, you know. It's just all about giving yourself grace over guilt. Being willing to know that you may make mistakes and that you will mess up as a parent. Being in the trenches is not always easy. It's going to be tough. It's going to be difficult. But giving yourself that grace, because all of us can go to bed at night, if you're a parent, knowing that you made mistakes throughout the day. But if you're able to just wake up, prepare yourself for another day, rectify anything that needs to be rectified before that day starts. You know, sometimes it may come down to you apologizing to a 7-year-old. It may come down to you having to apologize to your mate on maybe the way you responded to something or the way you came across. These things take place when you're in, you know, the trenches, the sticky floors and the messy rooms. You know, these things will take place. but always making sure that you just be present and show up for the next day. That's what it's all about. I think that's something that we learn for ourselves, is just showing up, just being ready for the next day, because it's going to come. You know, it's going to come and you can't stop it. And so you got to keep pushing forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And also not allowing like the struggles of today to, you know, keep you from just pushing forward and believing that things won't get better, that things will always be this way, because things can change. Again, everybody's situation is different, and some people's hardships, depending on what the situation is, they may be something that they may have to deal with for a while. But in some ways, even if it's just a matter of you developing a more positive attitude, strength, stronger community, mm-hmm. I think that those are things that can make a huge difference. And hopefully our story has been, you know, encouraging along those lines for you, you know, today. So thank you so much for listening. Hopefully this video won't get deleted.
It better not.
Hopefully this one will not get deleted, because I ain't doing this one again, you know. Y'all, I ain't doing it.
But no, for the most part, like she said, that's all we got. We hope that whatever was put down today can easily be, you know, picked up. And hopefully, if you feel like you are in that place where you do need assistance or whatever, it's always help out there. We always is a DM away, you know, or just a podcast away. Maybe just listening to this can be all the motivation you may need. Because like she said, at the end of the day, it's just our story. Mm-hmm. It's just our story. That's all. We're just telling you our day by day, you know, the mistakes we made, which is many, and just
many.
Just being real. Yep. So, but yeah, that's for the most part. So
thank you for tuning in.
In the trenches, keep staying in the trenches. Stay in the trenches.
Or fight for your life to get out.
Fight for your life. Fight for your life.
Thank you guys for tuning in.
Yeah, but once again, thank you for tuning in. Follow, like, and share. Episode will be up on Spotify. We'll also be posting. This is the very first one. Actually, just giving a shout out to Terry, because we had posted a poll of what they would like to see.
Oh, yes.
Audio or visual. And he was like one of the first ones that said visual. So shout out to Terry for getting us to this point.
See you tomorrow, Terry.
Yeah, see you tomorrow.
Well, by the time you see this, tomorrow would have already passed. But
So shout out to him for motivating us, and so hopefully we'll see how this goes and keep moving forward. And if y'all have any suggestions out there as far as like maybe the setup, anything that maybe a tech person that you may think can help us out when it comes to this, definitely feel free to share it. We're all ears, you know, we're all ears. And so yeah, but as always, this is the Bird's Nest.
The Bird's Nest.
And until next time, peace.